This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man band. I'm the number one fan. Last night I closed my eyes and viewed an awesome scene. I saw a holy place from bygone days, and I asked, what could this mean? There was a stone on the ground and words were written down. I strained my eyes to see, and it said, Ebenezer, for the Lord has helped me. Ebenezer, thus far the Lord has helped me. Time after time it seems I learn the same thing over again. When my back is to the wall and it seems like all is about to cave in, then I cry out in despair, and he is there just like so many times before. And my soul cried, Ebenezer, thus far the Lord has helped me. Now I'm standing at the crossroads. This one thing I ask, I long to return to lessons learned along the ancient path. Somebody ask, where are you going? Tell me, why are you walking so fast? I said, I've gotta get back to the place of faith. It's the only thing that's ever gonna last. Last night I closed my eyes and saw a holy place. There was a stone on the ground, and I could hear a sound coming from heavenly space. It said the stone rejected by the builders has become the cornerstone. And my soul cried, Ebenezer, thus far the Lord has helped me. Ebenezer, thus far the Lord has helped me. I run to my stone of help. Thus far the Lord has helped me. Jesus is my stone of help. Thus far the Lord has helped me. Jesus, you're my stone of help. Thus far the Lord has helped me.
Welcome to our podcast, Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host, and this is episode 169. We're well into our fourth year of doing this podcast, and I can't believe we've done this many. That's 169 hours that we've done. And Brian Hoogenboom is sitting here by me, as he does every Thursday night when we tape this show. Brian, you had somebody tell you one time, you told me, that said it would be really great if there was a podcast that told people's testimonies.
Yeah, actually, that's correct. I did have somebody say that to me, and I had to tell them, well, that's funny you should mention that, because we have quite a few testimonies as well as the music on this podcast here. And so I mentioned that to them, and of course, offered to help if they wanted any assistance from me to get things going or anything. That was kind of an interesting conversation.
Well, I counted it up. As we were sitting here a few minutes ago, we have had, this will be the 60th, I believe, around the 60th testimony that we've had on this show. So that's almost a third of, maybe even more than a third of the shows have been, as my wife puts it, ordinary people telling extraordinary stories. And so that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to interview a man named David Taylor, who has had a real history throughout his life of martial arts. So I thought I'd pull a song out of the archives that was recorded in 1997 from my CD called The Anchor Holes. This song is called Bully in the Neighborhood.
It's the righteous name, the holy name of Jesus of Nazareth. Like a lion on the prowl, seeking someone to devour. Like a wolf beginning to howl at the midnight. For some easy prey, someone he can pounce upon. But there's a weapon that can make him flee, and it's right there on the tip of your tongue. I've had just about enough of being bruised, abused, and beaten up. I think it's time to turn around and look him in the eye and face him down. The righteous name, the holy name of Jesus of Nazareth. Mm-hmm.
twice the sun. One word can chase him away when it's spoken in faith.
And I'm wondering if you could beam me up a little Brazilian song.
Tall and thin and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah.
Our guest tonight lives in Brazil. His name is David Taylor, and we're calling this episode the Brazilian Fight Club. David has a long history of martial arts involvement. He has a ministry to men called the Fight Club. So let's go to a telephone conversation I had with David last week. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon, Lawrence.
You live in Brazil now.
Yes, sir. Northeast Brazil.
What's the name of your town?
Our town, the name is Carpina.
I know you're not from Brazil. You're from Indiana, right?
That's right. I'm a Hoosier.
Okay. So how long have you lived in Brazil?
It's going on 9 years.
You have something you do called the Fight Club. I like that name. Was that an Indiana thing that you brought down to Brazil, or is that totally Brazilian?
What happened, from my understanding, a pastor in northern Indiana at Brookville Community Church, I saw that there was a need for a type of men's ministry that would reach the whole man. You know, we have our Bible studies, we might have sports ministries, but we don't have something that anchors everything together. And so they started a Wild at Heart ministry, which was a weekend retreat, from my understanding.
Yes.
And that birthed the 10-week program that we call Fight Club.
I've read that book. There's a book, right, called Wild at Heart.
Yes, by John Eldridge. We have 2 rounds each year, and each round lasts 10 weeks.
Okay. Now, when you call it a round, is this like a competition, like martial arts competition sorts of things?
So that really will depend on who's leading that particular squad or that particular area where they're meeting. So here in Brazil, we have guys that do jiu-jitsu. Some guys do boxing. We have a guy that does mixed martial arts. And so with us, I'll allow something that's martial arts related, but it's not necessarily that you're going to find that at all the other locations. It's based upon Nehemiah 4:14. The circumstances surrounding the verse, Nehemiah was commissioned to be able to build a wall around Jerusalem. And he had all the financial backing. He actually had the workers, and he had at least 2 people that were causing problems.
Yes.
And the people were afraid. Yeah, Sanballat and Tobias.
Right, right.
The people were concerned. They didn't know if the building could continue. And Nehemiah heard this information. And one translation I love says that when I heard these things, I stood up. And I like that.
Yeah.
So I can picture him, you know, assessing the situation, taking a moment, maybe saying a short prayer, you know, God, give me the right words to say to encourage the men, what have you. And so it says, and I stood up and I said to the nobles, to the officials, and to the rest of the people. So you can think of all these people that are surrounding him at this time. And he said, remember the Lord who is great and awesome. And I love that because that puts things into perspective, right?
Right.
Oftentimes when there's turmoil or frustrations or setbacks, we can lose our focus. So the first thing he says is to remember the Lord. Then he says, fight for your brothers or your brethren. Some translations say families, but I like the word brothers. So fight for your brothers, for your sons, your daughters, your wives, your homes. And that's the call of every Christian man, right?
Yes, yes.
To remember God and to fight for those things which are most important. So that's really what Fight Club is about. We have what some people will call four pillars. I like to think of the four pillars as if you have a table needs four legs to stand firm properly, right? But what happens when one of the table legs is broken or not the right height? The table can't serve its purpose. So with Fight Club, we have these four pillars or four legs, however you want to look at it, where we focus on, during that 10-week period, our mental progress, our spiritual progress, our physical progress, and our spiritual progress, our relational progress.
Okay, so mental, spiritual, physical, relational.
Yes.
You know, I keep thinking of that movie, The Fight Club, which I never actually saw, but I've seen clips of it. So this is not just a judo club. In other words, this has to do with all four aspects. And
right,
I would think there are not many men that excel in all four at the same time.
No. Most of us has one of those legs or pillars that needs some work. For me in Brazil, I struggle with the Portuguese language. I like to say I love the Brazilians, and they seem to love me, but for whatever reason, Portuguese does not love me. I struggle a lot with it.
Okay.
And that has been a barrier for me to form deep bonds with other people. But because of that pillar relationships, we're able to get past that barrier and find ways that can work around that for me. And it's been life-changing. I actually have closer friends here in Brazil than what I've had in the U.S. because of the journey that we go through in a Fight Club.
Wow. I've never been in a fight in my life because I knew I would get beat. So I would always try to say something funny or kind of divert it that way. But say if I moved to Brazil and I decided I want to join the Fight Club, what would I do? How would I do that?
Okay. So for instance, this coming month in March, March 15th, will be the kickoff for our round of Fight Club Brazil. We have already purchased 50 books. We're going to this round, we're going to start with Crazy Love by Francis Chan. And for 5 weeks, we'll read that book. And then after the first 5 weeks, we'll start Wild at Heart by John Eldridge. So you sign up. We have a form that you can fill out online. If you can't do that, my wife, who helps us with the registration, will help the guys to register on our kickoff. And then that's the main thing right there. Showing up, getting the welcome package, which includes the book, Crazy Love, and showing up. We meet every Thursday. We'll have a weekly letter that will explain what the objectives are for that week, for our mental, spiritual, physical, and relational goals. And then the following week, the following Thursday, we'll meet together in our squads, which usually is somewhere between 5 to 10 guys, and discuss those things, maybe do exercises together. Maybe we'll have a little bit of worship, depends on the night. For us, it's about 2.5-3 hours long is what it seems like it will be. So from about 8 to 10:30, maybe up to 11 if some guys need additional prayer or accountability or want to help with the cleanup.
Oh, that's great. Now, but do they have competitions? And do you go out and actually have a contest or fight other guys, or is the word fight more of a symbolic kind of thing? Somehow I thought you actually did like martial arts.
Well, that's another ministry that I'm involved with. I'm with the Glory Sports Ministry here with World Renewal Brazil, and so I oversee the Glory Sports Martial Arts. But Fight Club is more about men reaching men,
right,
equipping men, waking men out of, you know, the normal thing to real masculinity identified in the Bible.
That's
great. God really is calling every man into, right? But, you know, what happens in Fight Club stays in Fight Club, so I can't tell you if there's really fights.
Okay.
I'm sorry, that's from the movie. That's not the only thing I remember from the movie. But
yeah. So you're talking about two things. You're talking about the Fight Club, which is building the legs of the table, but you've also got this actual athletic wing where you actually get out there and fight, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm getting closer to that 50 age this year. I'll turn 50.
Yeah.
So I don't do it as much. I mean, I still love it. I mean, I love to push myself with jiu-jitsu or mixed martial arts, karate, whatever. I love the physical challenges that you go through in that kind of sports environment.
Yeah.
I love the disciplining. But, you know, if I get myself hurt, I don't recover like I did when I was 19. So I leave that to my other guys.
Yeah.
To be a little bit more aggressive. I'm getting, I see that the sand going down in the hourglass. I don't like it, but I'm coming to terms with it. So I'm more at this stage in life, I think where I am in my journey is that I want to give back like I was given.
Yeah.
With martial arts, to teach how I've been taught, to pass on the knowledge that I've been given, so that others can do what I've done, and hopefully better. Yeah. We have partnerships with some various different Christian martial arts organizations. So the American Bushido Kai Karate Association will come here once a year, and we'll have a martial arts camp where they'll get taught. The students will get taught, it could be some katas, it could be fighting techniques, it could be self-defense, how to use weapons, but it's all based upon doing things, you know, in a Christian environment and setting.
Right.
And then towards the end of the camp, they'll compete.
Just a couple of quick questions, because I want to get to the way you came to Christ and all this, but do you work with kids too, or is it mainly men?
Well, with Fight Club, you have to be 17.
Okay.
So we do have last round, I think we had three men that were 17 years old.
Okay.
That participated, if I remember right. And then of course, any age above that. I think our oldest guy was 60-something.
Did you do this in Indiana growing up? Were you into all martial arts and that sort of thing?
Right. Well, this would tie into my testimony. So I was always the short kid in school, and I had a big brother, and my big brother would tease me or pick on me. So when somebody my age or, you know, a little bit older than me picked on me out at school, I wasn't afraid of them because I'm like, you're not as big as my brother. So being the short guy, the bigger kids always would try to tease me or whatever. And I also had back then, and probably today still, I had a stuttering problem, which was really noticeable all the way up through my early schooling, especially. And so I wasn't afraid to necessarily get in the fight. I did have a couple of rules, not to throw the first punch. Okay. So that sometimes that didn't work out in my advantage. So somebody hit me good once or twice. that didn't really work. So I did learn how to use my, I think I had a pretty quick wit. So sometimes I could use that, like you were talking about. And most of the time though, my quick wit usually made things worse.
Like a smart, I was a slow learner. Smart aleck wit, huh?
Yeah. So I was funny for the moment and then get myself in trouble later. But I also was very protective of my friends. So oftentimes a fight I did get into was protecting somebody else.
Right.
When I was 16, maybe it was 15 and a half or so, my sister started dating who's now my brother-in-law, Joe, and he was a black belt. I was on the verge of getting kicked out of school permanently for fighting. And he made a deal with me. He said, I'll teach you martial arts, but you got to quit fighting. And that started my journey. Now I had a focus and a goal. My goal not to fight in school, and a focus to do something better with myself.
So that sounds a little bit almost like a contradiction, like I'm going to teach you how to fight, but you've got to stop fighting. Most people I thought did that so they could learn how to fight, you know, but you already knew how to fight.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I did or not, but I did get in a lot of fights.
okay, so he made this deal with you, so.
Right. So instead of getting mad and hitting somebody, I hit the heavyweight bag. Instead of getting mad and hitting somebody, I hit the focus pads. Instead of fighting in school or something like that, I invited my enemy to my martial arts class. And then most of the time when they saw me in class, they decided they didn't want to fight me after all.
Wow.
So that helped out. That helped out too. They saw me beating on a focus pad or whatever. And then like, okay, you want to spar? And they're like, no, I'll sit out. You sure? You know? So that got me maybe going onto a spiritual stage in my life. So I kind of was an atheist. Well, I started out as an agnostic. So I remember my friends spending a night at my house, and I would say, like, well, if there was a God, you know, who made God, and why did he abandon this world, that type of stuff. So I didn't exactly rule out that there was a God, but I didn't see him active or being personable in the world that we live in. And then when I started doing martial arts, I decided that, let's just say that there is some kind of divine force or something that is holding things together. I remember I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd get on top of our house. It was a ranch. And I sit on the shingles and I look at the stars and just be overwhelmed with the beauty I saw and the vastness that I saw. And I think about my fingerprints. Why am I the only person with my fingerprints? But I didn't necessarily think that there was a God.
Right.
My dad, he was struggling with alcohol. My parents were gone. We were building an addition to our house, a detached garage. Well, I wanted to do something nice for my parents. So we had this generic version of a bobcat. It's like a tractor with a little lift in the front.
Yes.
It's pretty dangerous. Didn't have a roll cage on it. And it really wasn't designed with safety in mind. But I thought I would move some dirt to the area they needed to go to while my dad and my mom was gone.
How old were you?
I'm driving that thing. I was probably 16 at this time.
Okay.
And I turned too fast and I have this load of dirt. And it's only on two wheels. I know that if it falls all the way over, it's going to crush me. Mm. And as a person who didn't believe that God existed or that there was a personable God, however you want to put it, I had a mental thought that said, release the load. And I did. And when I did, it landed back onto all four wheels. And I jumped off of that generic Bobcat tractor thing, got onto the ground, and was overwhelmed. In my mind, I said, God help me. I had that mental thought all happening all at the same time. Now, why would I do that? And that haunted me. By this time, so we move forward, I'm 16 and a half, going on 17, somewhere around there. And one of my friends got beat up in school, and he was a Christian. He was the only Christian that I would say that was a really good friend of mine. And he didn't deserve it. A jealous boyfriend beat him up because he was trying to share Christ to this girl.
Oh,
and the boyfriend got mad and beat him up. Yeah. Beat him up really bad.
By the way, what town were you from in Indiana?
The huge town, Franklin, Indiana.
Okay, so you're 16 and a half. Your Christian friend got beat up.
Yes.
For sharing the gospel, but I'm sure the guy thought it was flirting or whatever.
Right. And I decided, forget the commitments I made. This particular guy that beat up my friend is going to learn a lesson not to mess with one of my friends. So I was walking through the high school looking for this guy. And I turn a corner, and there's my friend all beat up. And he's being nursed and all that. And I said, don't worry about this. He's not going to mess with you again. I'm going to take care of this. And he said, no. And I said to my friend, yes, don't worry. He's not going to mess with you again. I'm going to take care of this. He said, no, Davey, actually, back then I was called Davey. He said, seriously, don't do this. Said, I'm okay with this. It's okay. So at that point, I would say I wanted what my friend had. He had self-control, and he didn't have a vengeful spirit. I was learning martial arts, but I still didn't have self-control. I was working at it, but I still had a hot temper.
So did you
at the same time?
I'm sorry.
No. I honored my friend's request.
So you took his advice. Okay.
So that's tugging at me now. I was in a class called Quest, which I think it was really for people that this is their last ditch effort to, you know, try to deal with them before they get kicked out of school.
Right.
And my teacher, she was a Christian. She said that she was going to have a special guest in our class, her pastor, and we could ask him a bunch of questions. So I had this plan to ask him a bunch of questions about Christianity. And my teenage intelligence, I thought I was so smart. I mean, I had all these questions. Like, what about aliens? Why are Christians so narrow-minded? All these different questions. Why do you think you're right and everybody else is wrong? By this time, I'm training with my brother-in-law, Joe, and his martial arts instructor, Mike. Mike told us that, hey, we're going to do... Me and my sensei, Dill, my brother-in-law, Joe, another guy, Dave Hawk, we're going to do a martial arts demonstration at the high school. Well, this is awesome. These are my people.
Okay.
And lo and behold, Mike's sensei, martial arts instructor, was Dill. Dill happened to be my teacher for Quest, her pastor.
Okay.
Well, everybody knew I was going to ask him these what I thought was great, intelligent questions. And I actually had some respect for him now because he's a martial artist and he's my instructor's, you know, instructor. And so I start off just asking, you know, firing out one question after another. And he treated me with so much respect. He was so kind to me. He answered my questions. That turned on me some more. So I had all these things going on. There's these two twins that moved to our school. And they were into Christian rock. Really nice guys. So now I had three Christian friends. And the girl I was dating at the time was a Christian.
Oh, my.
So a lot of things are
happening. They're surrounding
you. Yeah. Yeah, and I can't get away from them. Well, I still wasn't like a good person. And so my friends that were twins invited me to this youth event in Indianapolis. And I said, okay, well, what's happening? Well, there's games and there's free pizza. I'm like, okay. And it's at our church. I'm like, oh, no, thank you. And they said, yeah, but there's free pizza and there's pretty girls. Okay, now I'm interested. So even though I had a girlfriend at the time or whatever, I still, you know, wasn't thinking the best. So free pizza and pretty girls. Okay, I'm going to go to it. Well, that was called the Tuesday Nights for Teens. And they wore us out. We played all kinds of games. And then at the end, there was a free pizza that my two friends told me about. At the end, now Pastor John, he had, those spikes, those railroad spikes or railroad ties?
Yeah, sure.
He had one of those in his hand, and he was talking about the things that Jesus did, how he was mocked, how his beard was pulled out, and he got punched in the face. Of course, that reminded me of Johnny getting beat up, how he was whipped with the cat of nine tails, and he was so beaten that he wasn't even recognized as human. This weak, blue-eyed Jesus that I always pictured in my mind became a lot stronger. This was a man who had mental toughness. This was a man who was determined to accomplish what he wanted to accomplish. And the Pastor John said, he endured all these things for the joy that was set before him. He endured the cross. And then he started striking that railroad tie with a hammer and explained that God loved us. And I felt like he was talking to me. God loved Davy Taylor so much that he gave his one and only son so that Davy Taylor, if he would believe, trust in God, could have everlasting life. I felt like Pastor John was speaking directly to me. And I believe it was at that time when I made my decision for Christ. If God loved me, a person that would lose his temper, that had a stuttering problem, that constantly found himself making things worse, if God loved me, that's the kind of God I want to believe in. And if Jesus was willing to suffer all those things before the crucifixion for me, that's the type of God I want to follow. That's the type of man I want to be like, a man that could stay on focus and endure hardship. That's when I made my decision. And so when this was at a Baptist church. So the stereotype, he gave an invitation and I responded.
And you were 16 and a half years old, right?
Yes. Just shy of 17.
Thank God for your friends that invited you to
talk. Yeah. It took a lot of people, a lot of people, a lot of circumstances. My grandpa would take me to church when I was young, and I didn't have the best experience. I remember I had some clothes from a funeral, maybe like a year that were bought maybe a year before, and went to the youth group, and my sleeves were way past my wrist, way up there because I outgrown them, and the church kids made fun of me. And they were playing basketball outside. I went over to play basketball with them. I lived in the country. never played basketball. We had a basketball goal, but it wasn't, you know, the standard height. So it was pretty high up. So I'd overthrow. So when I tried to play with them, they made fun of me about that. I said, I'm not going back. This isn't for me. Now, that particular church, okay, God has a sense of humor. He really does. And let me explain why. The youth minister at that church became the pastor of the church that I went to where I accepted Christ.
Did you recognize him when you saw him?
Oh, not at first. It took me going to church for a little bit to recognize who that guy was. You see, when I was probably 15, that pastor, Pastor John, and some people from church came to my parents' house, and I had some of my friends over, and they started singing carols. It was around Christmas time. I opened the door, and they're singing carols, and I go, oh, I got something for you, and I slammed the door in their face. And me and my friends just thought that was the funniest thing ever. But God has a sense of humor, and have that guy be the guy who leads me to Christ. So you're talking to a guy that's had plenty of egg on his face for his stupid decisions.
So you slammed the door. You slammed the door one time, but opened it up later on for the same guy.
That's right. That's right.
You're listening to the testimony of David Taylor, who lives in Carpina, Brazil. This is a podcast called Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. I'm always struck when I hear testimonies like this regarding the importance of friends and just regular, ordinary people who take a chance to reach out and share Jesus. And I thought of this song I wrote a while back. I want to play it now before we get to the end of our interview with David. This song is really a letter that a friend is writing to another friend, sharing the importance of coming to Christ. It's called Not Ready.
You're just ready for Jesus. That's what I heard you say. You're just not ready to give him your heart. That's why I'm writing today. I just can't get you off my mind. How many years must you wait? It's always some future moment in time, but later might end up too late. 'Cause ready or not, like it or not, believe it or not, he's coming again, and there'll be no time for second chances then. Jesus is coming again, and there'll be no time for second chances then. You're just
just not ready for Jesus. On this point, we both agree. And I just can't get you off my mind, for I want you in heaven with me. I just can't get you off my mind. I just want to see you. I just want to be with you. Oh, I want you in heaven.
Let's return to my conversation with David Taylor as he shares how later on in his life, he felt God calling him to go to Bible college and to start a ministry.
The first Bible college I went to, I kind of had a mental breakdown over some of the doctrinal changes that took place there. But that's when I first met you in a way, because that's where I got introduced to the song Anchor Holds.
They had it.
Yeah. So I feel like I've known you since my early days as a Christian, just so you know.
My goodness. I had no idea of that. Really?
Right. And especially at this particular college is pretty strict. And they did allow some music like Ray Bolt's, Michael Card, Steve Green, and the band Acapella. Those were like my four to music that I went to right there. Those were the four. And Michael Card got me into the passion of studying the Bible for all it's worth.
Yes.
The Anchor Holds and maybe a couple other songs really spoke to me, especially about holding some like a dream in your hands and then losing that. It was there and I lost it. And I had the mental breakdown out at the one Bible college. And I decided I was going to go to another Bible college where they said that I could go and be a part of the martial arts team. And that particular college, it worked out okay at first, but then some of my friends I thought were treated unfairly. And biblically, I think I'm right on that. Mm-hmm. But that's when I had a really mental breakdown. And then I returned back to my home, to my Bible, my church there. And then realized that I was going to go on a different journey. And that's when I went to another church and saw a better vision of what God wanted to do with my life. And then I got married, had some kids, still working construction. Didn't go back to Bible college because I couldn't find the Bible college that I felt comfortable going back into.
Right.
And then my marriage falls apart. Won't get into all the details. My health falls apart because of an auto accident. And I had to quit construction. And the guys that I worked with in remodeling, they were the best Christian guys you could ask for. And I felt like it was taken away from me, you know, and I questioned God at that time. You know, everything's falling apart and it's not making sense, Lord, but I still want to pursue you. I still want to follow you with all my heart, but I don't know what's happening. I'm working on my marriage and I go to a new church and now I'm working in insurance because I couldn't do construction. And it was at that church where I got introduced to Gary Wright, and he invited me to go back to Bible college. And I signed up. So I'm going to do it. Well, that's when I found out like within weeks that my marriage wasn't going to be restored. And I told him, Gary, I need to withdraw. I'm going to be losing my insurance agency. My marriage is falling apart. I don't belong in Bible college. And he told me, I think you need to be in it. You need something to anchor you. You need something to keep you focused. And it's not going to be held against you what's going on.
What a wonderful, thank God there are people like Gary.
Right.
What a wonderful thing to say when you're at that point.
Right. So then I went through the doctoral statements for the college, and there's a couple of things where there might be some gray areas where we agree or don't, just, you know, we might have a little bit of disagreement on. And I said, you know, is the college going to have a problem with me because I believe this? Is the college going to have a problem with me because I believe that? And like, these aren't the essentials. These are where Christians have always had difference of views, right?
Right.
Gray areas.
Right.
And he goes, why would they? I'm like, well, because the last two Bible colleges I went to, they became big issues.
Yes.
He's like, no, you shouldn't have any problem. I'm like, are you sure? And so I had all these hangups that I saw. And what Gary said was potential, you know. And looking back, the way I do ministry today is the way that I've learned through the hurt and through the healing, being affirmed, you know, during difficult times, having people believe when I didn't believe. I actually said to Gary, I said, I don't believe what you're saying, but I'm going to cling on to your belief and I'm going to claim it.
Mm.
And so I had many nights with God claiming it. Trust me.
Yeah. So you were a single dad trying to make a living and trying to go to college. Wow, that was a full plate.
Yeah. Here's what I was. I was a single dad living in his parents' basement because I lost the house. And going to college and then trying to start a business.
And raising kids.
You know, I just pictured this big, in my mind, I had a battle with, and sometimes we always have that battle in the mind, this big F for failure, you know, was in my mind a lot at that time. But I just had to keep on believing that there is a future. You know, Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers, was put in prison, falsely accused, and endured a lot of hardship before God put him into the place where he could benefit other people. And so I would hold on to that a lot. One of my friends said, I'm just going to rename you Job.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who's going through more stuff than you. So I had a lot of accountability partners because I knew I couldn't trust myself during that time. I needed to have people that would hold me accountable for choices that I would potentially make. My lawyer, he actually, I don't know if he is a Christian or not, but he said, young man, listen to me. Now I was in my 30s, so I didn't consider myself a young man, but he said, one of you needs to be the stability for your children. And I believe you can do it and you need to do it. And so even my lawyer was speaking to me, it seemed like, during that time.
So let me ask you just a few more questions. Philip Yancey wrote a book one time years ago, which helped me a lot when my wife and I were going through a really sad time with miscarriages and that sort of thing. It was called Disappointment with God. And, you know, I'm sure you've gone through this. I've heard people say, if you come to Christ, oh, he's going to give you this great life and all these problems are going to go away and all that. But when you came to Christ, it's like all hell broke out. Did you ever feel tempted to say,
okay, God, I know you love me, but I think you've kind of let me down. Have you ever been were you ever disappointed with God when you were going through all these things falling apart?
Well, there's, you know, I'm not going to be all like Mr. Spiritual here, but I would say during those hardest times, God became more real to me than what he ever was before. I became more in love with God during those times than before. So you got to remember, this is a God that accepted me and loved me after all. When I was in middle school and high school, I wore an upside down cross and I'd go behind Christians and say, Satan wants their soul. And this is the God that pursued me.
Yeah, yeah.
I listened to music that profaned the name of Jesus. And I remember my early days becoming a Christian while everybody else was singing hymns. I was singing in my head, Jump in the Fire. So I was trying to get the song out of my head. That's where the band Apologetics became a big helpful, you know, shout out to Apologetics there for rewriting music so that it gives God the glory. I can't say that God has ever abandoned me. He might allowed me to go through some hard times, but those very things are what allows me to minister to other people today. Before, I might knew all the biblical answers as far as like, say, marriage, divorce, separation, relationships. I knew the biblical answers, but how do I minister to somebody that's struggling in their marriage? I don't know. I didn't experience that.
Yeah.
But I became a radar. I remember a guy walking into church when I was a youth minister, and he stood beside me, and my heart sped up, and I turned over and I looked over at him. I said, "Hey, how you doing?" He said, "I'm fine." I said, "How's your family?" And he just broke down crying. God gave me a radar to know that this man was having a marital problem. I didn't have that before. So in a lot of ways, I believe God allowed me to be broken so that I could be a vessel that's used.
You're a fighter. You've proven you're a fighter to go through all the things you went through. You have another wife now, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Her name is Ivana, but earlier in the week, I called her Erin when I was driving, and she's like, "What?" She's Brazilian.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it. And right now I have a couple of different studies that I'm going through the whole Bible. And one of them was Moses and Aaron, and Moses needed Aaron. And she goes, "What?" And I'm driving, taking her to the international school where she works in the afternoon. And I said, "Yeah, you're my Aaron." And I said, "Just like Moses, you know, I stutter, and you know, I can't speak Portuguese like I want or like I should. You know, some people would say like I should, and that's okay. They can say that. We know. I personally know my struggles and my limitations, but God gave me an Aaron who will speak for me and oftentimes does."
Well, I appreciate you taking the time out to talk to me. You've got an incredible story, and God bless you. And we're going to be praying that God continue to bless your ministry and physically and all the way around. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I have one question for you.
Okay.
Am I your 89th friend now? Sorry, I couldn't resist. I told you I got bad jokes.
You can be if you want to.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. Yes. I appreciate it.
I like that. Yes. You're my 89th friend. Great.
All right.
And I'm glad you listened to my song years ago. That meant a lot to me.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, probably starting about a month or two ago, I started, I have Amazon Prime Music.
Yeah.
So I'm starting with your latest, working my way back. So right now I'm a slow learner, so I can't quote many songs, but there's some some that like have a certain flavor that I like. Now you're a musician, so you would correct me, but I'd say it sounds more like bluegrass.
Yeah.
And even though as a heavy metal guy, I've always liked bluegrass. I don't know. But so I don't know the name of the song yet. I don't get the words down, but that one I listened to on repeat a few times. I'm like, wait. Like, that's not the goal. The goal is get familiar with the music. So
I have
the whole album. That's what I'm working on.
I have a pastor friend who told me you're the Baskin Robbins songwriter because you've got 31 flavors. So.
Oh, man. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it.
Great. Well, hey, it's great talking to you. This was wonderful. I appreciate it a lot.
I appreciate it too.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you. I really do.
Same to you. Okay. How do you say goodbye in Portuguese?
Ciao.
Okay. Ciao. Talk to you later. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Kickoff was at noon. Fans began to gather and the band played out of tune. The new coach told the players we're standing on the brink. There's gonna be some changes made, starting with the way we think. Last week somebody told me last year we didn't do too bad. We ended 5-5. We gotta do better than that. Goodbye to the past. We can do better than that. I said we can do better than that. She was having a pity party down at the dairy bar. Tears fell on her Sunday. She said they repossessed my car. I've always been a loser. That's what I. I shouldn't expect more, you know it runs in the family. A friend said you're pathetic, this conversation stinks. You keep on talking like that and you'll become just what you think. You can do better than that. Gotta get a new mindset. No excuses, no regrets. You can do better than that. Why settle for the minimum? You can win and then some. Say goodbye to the past. We can do better than that. I went to church last Sunday for the first time. Ask how long will you sit there on that fence. If you live a life of sinning, you'll reap some sad regrets. This could be a new beginning. Hey, you can live better than that. You can live better than that. Gotta get a new mindset. No excuses, no regrets. You can live better than that. Why settle for the man?
Thanks for listening to our show tonight. Special thanks to David Taylor for sharing his awesome testimony. Also to Brian Hoogenboom, the Surgeon General, who edits this podcast every week. Also to Mike Dawka and to Julie Carroll. Hope you join us next week. God bless.
me and my 88 friends.